This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hello, and welcome to It's a Fandom Thing. I'm your host, Erin Marlowe, and each week I'm joined by a panel of guests to discuss all things fandom and pop culture, primarily from a female perspective. You'll find everything from fanfic to cosplay to Schitt's Creek to Supernatural and everything in between. So put on your favorite piece of fandom merch, set aside that fanfic that you're writing about your OTP, and sit back and enjoy this week's episode. Hello, and welcome to It's a Fandom Thing. We are continuing our celebration of horror with part two of my interviews from the Colorado Festival of Horror. And I'm really excited to bring you these two interviews with Brink Stevens and Xander Smith. I really love these two, and I really enjoyed sitting down and talking with both of them. First up is my interview with Brink Stevens. She is a legendary scream queen who you know from such films as Slumber Party Massacre, Teenage Exorcist, Scream Queen Hot Tub Party, and many, many more. She is an amazing, lovely human being, and I had so much fun sitting down and talking to her about her life in film and also chatting about her love of science and marine biology, which is what she originally went to school for. And so it was just a great, fascinating conversation. She's so sweet, so genuine, so nice. I could have talked to her for hours. So I really think you'll enjoy this interview. So here it is, my interview with Brink Stevens. Thank you so much. And I also want to add, right before this starts, we do talk a little bit about the Me Too movement and get into a little bit of that. So just a brief little warning about that. Thanks. So I wanted to first get into, you know, as a woman in horror, what I thought was interesting at your Q&A that you said that you found that all horror sets were like a family and very open, and you never experienced any kind of Me Too stuff or any kind of weird harassment or flirting or anything on horror sets.
Mm-hmm.
But other films, you did kind of experience that. Why do you think there's such a difference between those horror sets that you were on compared to maybe some other things you went out for as a woman?
Probably the main reason is because horror is such a small, close-knit community. Everyone knows everyone else. And you really can't get away with any bad behavior because you'll be censored by everyone else in the community. And, you know, not to say that I didn't date some of my producers or directors, I did, but it wasn't that they came on to me or made me feel like a sexual object. Whereas in the mainstream, boy, the early 80s, you know, before the Me Too movement, there was so much abuse going on where I was hit on constantly. And the first time it happened, the guy said, well, you know, I'm pretty sure that I'll hire you for this role, but there's this other actress that's just as good. So what do you think would convince me? And I said, my talent? And he said, well, I had something else in mind. Why don't you come up to my house and we'll go swimming in my pool? And I said, well, how does that have anything to do with my acting ability? And I argued with him. He got really frustrated with me because I was trying to keep it professional and he's trying to, you know, move in on me. And it was just so funny. So then I realized what I was encountering here. And another audition for a TV show, I go in and there's this heavyweight, sweaty kind of guy sitting behind the desk. He's the casting guy. And he slides a Polaroid across the desk, and I'm looking at it, and I can't figure out what I'm seeing on this Polaroid. And then I realize that it's a picture he took holding the camera down, facing down on his lap, and there's a woman's head in his lap giving him a blowjob. And he didn't say anything, but kind of tapped the picture and looked at me like, you know, and I'm just like, I literally fled in tears because I was there to audition for a TV show. And it was just so humiliating in those days to be a young, pretty girl and to be hit on like that. Later, it changed to where more and more of the filmmakers were gay. And I was hearing from my male friends that they were getting the casting couch. Yeah, and even straight guys would consider being sort of gay for pay just to get a job.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I think in that industry, for some reason, it seems like people feel like it's more acceptable to do that kind of stuff because it doesn't seem like it's like, you know, because it's like a fantasy world and you can do whatever you got to take to get into that.
Yeah, well, it was so male dominated.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that women finally came forward and we had the whole Me Too movement and a lot of abuses were corrected, like Weinstein and all of that, because everybody knew about Weinstein and what he was doing. I had heard it way back. And it was just kind of, well, that's the way it has to be. But after people started coming forward and men started being put on the burner for this, it really made things a lot better for women, where opportunities opened up that hadn't been there before. And I was offered several directing jobs. Charles Band at Full Moon wanted to do a remake of Sorority Babes in the Slimeball Bolarama. And I was tapped to be a director on it, and I'm sure that his reasoning had something to do with, let's hire a female director because it'll make us look good. But I was fine with that. You know, I'll take where and how I can get it.
Yeah. Well, and also speaking of that with female directors, Slumber Party Massacre, which of course everybody knows your famous, wonderful, amazing death scene in there.
Oh, thank you, yes.
And just you.
I died well.
You did. But having a woman direct that and then having the script be written by a woman, which I think some people actually forget that. What was the difference between working with, because I know that was your first movie.
It was. This was my first feature film. I'd only done one short film before that, so I was brand new at acting. My first movie is directed by a woman and written by a woman, and it's a slasher film where the women kind of best the killer in the end. So it was, you know, I thought maybe this is the standard now. I had no idea how lucky I was to have that combination. And because of the women being involved, everybody was saying, oh, it's a feminist slasher movie. But we didn't set out to make a feminist movie. And in fact, Amy Jones kind of tried to be a guy as far as directing style, where she didn't hold back. She tried to have violence and blood and all of that because she knew that she was being sort of auditioned by Roger Corman as a director. And she really wanted to be an editor. I think she was an editor. But she wanted to just try her hand at directing and was acquired a slush pile of scripts, and one was called Sleepless Night, which became Slumber Party Massacre, and she liked that one, and she thought, well, I can do this. And so she did a sizzle reel where she shot some concept scenes and stuff of how she would do it, and Corman said, I love it, make a movie. So Roger Corman was really at the forefront of giving a lot of people chances. Women like Amy Jones, female writers like Rita Mae Brown, who was a novelist already, but I think this was one of her few and first screenplays. And of course, you know, I got my start from Roger Corman in this movie, and so did Jack Nicholson, and so many people can contribute and say Roger Corman really helped me out. So he was a good guy.
Yeah, and I think he doesn't get enough credit for that because I think people kind of just think of him as, you know, not as
a low-budget filmmaker, maybe exploitation, and all of that. And you can make exploitation movies. You can do it tongue-in-cheek and have fun with it, but you can still be a really fair, good person.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing that you got that opportunity. And what I think is also just so incredible about you is that you have so much agency over your career. I mean, you don't even have an agent.
No. I had an agent at the beginning of my career. And I quickly realized that I was doing more for myself than he was. Like, I went into the office one day and I said, do you need more headshots? I haven't heard from you. And he said, no, I haven't been sending them out. I don't really like that picture. And I'm like, you could have told me. You could have said something. Yeah, I mean, here's this guy, and you know, the type of agents I could get when I was just starting out were the guys that if someone received an envelope with their return address on it, they'd put it in the trash without opening it. Like Jack Scagnetti, for example, they knew that he didn't have any good clients. So it was really tough to try to get an agent. And I had one agent, Roxanne, who specialized in body doubles. And I was willing to do nudity. It didn't bother me. So I got sent on a lot of things where I was like an audition with Barbara Hershey for The Entity. She didn't want to do nudity. So two of us were sent over to her, and we had to lift our blouses up. And she picked the other girl because the other girl had larger breasts than she did. And she's like, I want her.
That makes sense. You're like, yep, I'm gonna.
Yeah. I know. You know, it's kind of body parts. And then I was, I did a body double thing for Psycho 3, where one of the scenes was bad. It had bad lighting, and they needed to reshoot it. And Diana Scarwood was willing to do it, but she was in New York working on a play and couldn't come back to Hollywood. So the call went out, and I matched her physically. So you see my butt. I think it's the first thing. Anthony Perkins is looking through a hole in the wall, spying on her character. And I think the first thing you see is my butt. And it was really funny because my next door neighbor said, "Was that your butt?" I'd recognize that anywhere.
That's funny. So that's the body part you're getting recognized for.
I know. Yeah.
Well, I want to ask you, what draws you to a role? Like, what inspires you? Like, if you're reading scripts and you have to choose, like, what is going to draw you in?
I started out doing a lot of victim roles, and it was fine. It was fun, you know, a lot of running in high heels and screaming and real action kind of stuff. But lately, I get more roles offered to me, like doctors, professors, police commissioners, teachers, scientists, and I really like that. I just got offered a movie called Hellfire in January of 2022. It shoots in Texas, and the role was originally written for a man. It's the character is called Bob, and I'm really curious who first said, "Let's get Brink Stevens. She'd be perfect for this role," because Bob is a retired police chief who has two ex-wives, and he sits around drinking beer and watching porn. And I'm like, okay. And now we're having a discussion on how much they're going to rewrite the script to accommodate me. And the director thinks it'd be funny to just leave it the way it is, and that I have two ex-wives. And I'm like, well, in Texas, would a police commissioner have two ex-wives?
That's
a woman,
true.
You know?
That's
yeah, it has to be kind of realistic. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of a cliche. You know, you got to admit, a retired police guy watching porn and drinking beer. So I'm hoping that they'll rewrite it to some extent to better utilize my talent. And not just make it a jokey kind of thing. But I just thought that was pretty funny that somebody read that and thought of me. But I understand, because they wanted a name, and that was a role that I could fit into. So I get that.
Speaking of scientists, now that was originally what you wanted to do, was, and you worked in science and you wanted to be in that field. And I know you said yesterday in your Q&A that whenever you're playing scientists, you actually use your real name, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So how do you feel about that field right now, as far as like women getting into that field? And do you ever do, I know you don't work in that, but do you ever do anything that kind of has anything to do with that? Or do you still research and stuff?
Yeah. In 1976, I was accepted in graduate school at Scripps Institute of Oceanography. And I came in with a 4.0 grade point average. I had been president of Mortar Board. I joined every club. I really deliberately tried to get the best resume possible. And I had double majored in biology and psychology, and I wanted to work with dolphins. Well, it was a miracle I got accepted at the school, because Scripps had been an all-male school until only a year or two before I applied. And I was the only marine biology student that they admitted that year. And they said right away, we don't know what we're going to do with you. We don't have a major professor that we can give to you. You're going to have to just kind of find your own way. And I tried. I attached myself to Dr. Koyman, who was doing research with fish, but there were a few seals that were around. So I started working with seals. I preferred dolphins, but nobody wanted to talk to dolphins because they were slaughtering them in tuna nets in San Diego. So I was working with seals, and the amount of prejudice that I encountered as a woman, it was still the pat on the head, oh, you must have loved Flipper when you were a kid. And the thought that women are only in college to find a husband, and as soon as they do, they'll drop out. And so no one took me seriously. My whole 2 years at Scripps was just fraught with difficulty. And finally, they found a way to get rid of me. I started doing illicit research with dolphins at SeaWorld, and someone ratted on me, so they kicked me out of school with a master's degree, but I never finished my doctorate. But they never liked me from the beginning. They didn't want me there, and it was so obvious. Now, weirdly, times have changed, and the salaries have not risen that much for marine biologists. They're still so low that a man can't support a family on that kind of scientist salary, but a single woman, it's fine for her. Now, most marine biologists are women, single women. Yeah, so since 76, things have changed radically, but boy, it was tough when I went into school there.
Oh, I bet, yeah. And the sexism, like you said, encountering that. Yeah. Well, I want to know, just to wrap up here, what projects do you have coming up? Are there any things that you're really, really excited? I know you're going to go film something.
Yes.
But any other projects coming out?
In 10 days, I go to Sacramento, California, and I'm working with a woman writer and director named Terry Dawn Arnold. I did a previous movie with her called Two Sisters, and she's an award-winning female filmmaker, so I'm really excited to be working with her again. And I've got three more movies the rest of this year. I get bitten by a werewolf in one of them, and in another one, I get killed by religious cultists. Yeah, in fact, I die in all four of these movies. So, yeah, you know, it's fun. And I've got several conventions. Halloween is always a busy time, so I'll be all over the place next month, October, for Halloween. But I love my life, and I always manage to stay busy. And, you know, because I do work in the low-budget indie field, I can't afford to retire. So I've got to keep doing this for as long as somebody will hire me.
Well, but it's great that you keep doing it, that you love what you're doing.
And yes.
Yeah, and I'm sure the indie world is sometimes, even though it's harder financially, as far as like when people are making stuff, I'm sure it's a lot more liberating.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, in mainstream A-list movies, they don't want to hire women over 40. Mm-hmm. And it's still really true. You're not allowed to grow old. And that, you know, people get all these really bad facelifts and stuff like that, and then you never hear of certain actresses like Cameron Diaz. Once they turn 40, they're gone. Meg Ryan. But in horror, it's just great. You know, I've never had any work done on my face. I show my age, and that's fine. You know, nobody cares. They hire me for those kind of parts. Retired police chief, stuff like that. And I love that about horror, where it's so much more accepting than mainstream films.
Yeah, well, and you look awesome.
Oh, thank you.
You are so gorgeous. And I love all the photos, too, that you had down there. They're just amazing.
Well, it's funny because my career spans 40 years, and I did a lot of my most famous work in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So I have movies for sale and photos from the 80s. And people will be looking at my table, and they'll look at the photos and look at me and go, "Is that you?" And I feel a little insulted, like, why do you think I'm sitting here? Yeah, you know, and it makes me feel a little bad that, you know, 40 years ago I was young and beautiful, but, you know, I'm still me, and I'm honored at conventions like this. The Colorado Festival of Horror has made me their guest of honor, and it's so nice to be part of this first-time show. Yeah. And to help in the creation and cementing its place in the world.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, seriously, and you're beautiful.
Oh, thanks.
You're absolutely beautiful. So thank you so much. And seriously, if you ever are at a convention, again, anyone out there listening to us, to this episode, really go to a convention if Brink Stevens is there, because she's amazing. So
I look forward to meeting you guys out there. Thank you.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Thank you again, Brink. I really, really enjoyed sitting down and talking with you, and maybe we'll have you back sometime. So thank you again. And lastly, we have my interview with Xander Smith. I just really, really like this guy. He's a very, very talented concept artist, a digital character designer, art director. He does some amazing, amazing work. And you have seen his work in American Horror Story, Scream Queens, Godzilla vs. Kong, and other things as well. And I just really loved this conversation. I really enjoyed sitting down with him. So here it is, my interview with Xander Smith. And it's funny because we actually just finished doing a celebration, more like an in-depth critique of Ryan Murphy shows not too long ago. And one of them was, of course, American Horror Story. And I know you did a very interesting character design for season 5 for Hotel, right? Didn't you do the one for Hotel with the interesting death in the very first episode?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
I know that first episode is like, okay, that's a little intense.
That's what I thought too.
Oh,
you're not alone in that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's supposed to be because it's American Horror Story.
Oh, yeah.
So what's that experience like working on those shows and with Ryan Murphy?
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that. Yeah, it's awesome to be talking with you, and yeah, especially since you know something about the show.
Yes.
But yeah, I'd like that you went specifically for that character, of course. It doesn't surprise me.
Very memorable.
I will say that is one that, even amongst all the American Horror Story stuff I've done, that one stands out. And I also, if you haven't picked up by now, I also get a bit hesitant to talk about it because he is a controversial character.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you want to maybe say like what we're talking about specifically?
Yeah, I just didn't know how graphic you wanted me to. But well, as Jen from my streaming bubble, she was on that episode with us, one of our panelists. She said, "My poor Schmidt from New Girl gets killed right away by, well, a guy who has basically a very phallic device and, you know, kills the guy by basically, trigger warning out there, everybody, but basically by rape." And by right, isn't that exactly how you would, is that how you would describe it?
Yes, yeah, for better or for worse.
Yeah,
it's interesting, right? So, yeah, so, okay, with that character specifically, they knew that this is really tricky territory, right? And they want to go there because they want to do the most villainous thing that they can possibly do, and they did.
Yes.
Right? They actually, you know, they kind of gave everyone a, you know, like a trigger warning or, you know, just let people know this is what we're going to be working on, you know, and everyone got okay with the subject material. So I did appreciate that they, you know, want to do that for everyone. So in my case, I'm being contracted out through a makeup effects studio called AFX, and it's run by the legendary David Anderson and Heather Langenkamp, who's the the original Scream Queen in Nightmare on Elm Street, right?
Yeah. Nancy.
Exactly, Nancy, yeah. And they're wonderful. So I've worked with them pretty much through, you know, all the seasons that I was on. So yeah, so I bring that up because it's interesting. They have been in horror for forever. That's, you know, where they got their name from. And even they are like, there are certain things that we know are, bear with me, important topics, right? They're things that we do need to talk about because of their very nature. They are the very worst aspects of humanity. And it's important that we explore those aspects in our media. It really is. Because that's the only way we can get exposure, talk about things, you know, have conversations like this. And so we talked that through, and I have no doubt that every other department on it is also talking about these things. So anyhow, I read the script, I read those moments, it's a little, you know, in the script it's a little more brash. I think in the script they literally called it a drildo, which is what the demon is wearing.
Yeah.
So I read it, and like I said, obviously stands out to me because I've designed lots of horrific things, but there's tiers to it, right? It's one thing when you're Jason, you're slashing people. It's another thing when you're engaging. So I did feel strange designing this thing. So I did sketches. They sent me images of the actor, who's like a phenomenal. I'm not getting this wrong. I think he's a contortionist, so he can do these wretched movements, right? So we got pictures of him, and I start sketching on top. Get some of those, and I get to the drilled out part, and I kind of put aside the horrific nature of it, and I'm like, you know what? I want to design this properly. I want it to be something that is evil. It's demonic. So yeah, got into 3D, built the thing. Ryan Murphy approved it. Everyone is like, that's it. That's absolutely horrendous. And that's what we see in the final product. And now whenever someone talks about it, I feel the need to be like, I'm sorry, but you're welcome. It was, it was fun as well.
Well, you did your job, though. That was your job.
100%,
and you did it really, really well, because it is one of the most disturbing scenes to watch. But I think that's a compliment, though. That's not like a...
If it was like,
oh, that's just kind of yawn, I've seen that 100,000 times before... Then, it does take, because in a lot of slasher films, you can say also, you could say like the knife is phallic. You could say a lot of symbols
and
those are phallic
yeah.
as well. And with this, it's literally that. So it's like an interesting way to take it. And because I know in a lot of American Horror Story, we talked about that a lot. He does have a lot of sexual assault within a lot of his stories. I think probably happens at least once a season, if not more than that.
Probably.
So it's an interesting way to just take that concept of there's a lot of phallic imagery already in horror, and then if you take it the literal sense. But I think it's awesome that they did trigger warnings for that before they had you do those designs. That's
I don't know that they said trigger warning. That's like
but,
a new term.
But
for
they
me,
went
but...
like over what.
Oh
it was
yeah, yeah,
like.
Yeah. I mean, people. Yeah. You know the material you're dealing with. You know the impact it's going to have. And you want to make sure that, everyone is, how do you say this, like, talking about it in a way that's constructive and not, I'm sure no one got the sense that that's glorifying anything. It's like they're to be able to, discuss these kinds of topics, right, and spark podcasts like this.
Yeah, and not making it gratuitous or not making it where it's like, this is sexy to watch this because
it's not
at all, but some people do film stuff like that where it's like, okay,
that's
it's
very true.
Be,
yeah, it's a whole spectrum.
That way. Exactly.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for going into that. Seriously, that was a lot more than I thought it was going to get, so thank you. But going back, I just want to know, how did you sort of get into this field? What drew you into this field?
I've been drawing since I was, 2 years old, maybe even younger. I had extraordinarily supportive parents, Brett and Jeannie Smith, who are, some of the co-founders of Colorado Festival of Horror. And they never said no to any of the weird stuff I wanted to draw, or, they're very supportive. So, I got into clay and oils and, everything I could possibly want, and, did all the, artsy high school classes like 3 times over each. It was natural. It was more like I felt like I didn't have a decision. I had to go become excellent at art to make a living, because otherwise I'm going to be doing art regardless and not making a living. It was more of an obsession, a little bit of passion, but mostly obsession, 14-hour days for a decade. My favorite medium is film or television. As far as storytelling goes, I was like, I know that's where I need to be. I know I need to work on more of a digital portfolio, because there's no rules in the digital world, right?
Yeah.
So you can do things like horrible phallic demons, but also lots of other cool stuff. That's the medium I went into. I went into 3D design both together. So I'm very fortunate. I've had an excellent career where I've been able to explore pretty much whatever I wanted. I've worked in 3D printing. I've worked in VFX. Concept art's kind of my bread and butter. Worked in a variety of different industries, video games, film, television, illustration, comics. Damn, I'm very fortunate. Now I have the pleasure of going into things like digital fashion is what I'm currently working on. Got some films coming up. I'm getting into the NFT space. That's kind of how it started and where it's going.
Awesome. Yeah, well, and I encourage everybody to go and follow Xander on Instagram and then go to his website and look at some of his work, because it's really some of that work on there is really incredible. And I don't know if anybody ever points this out, but the 3D art, I loved the, is it an alligator or is it a crocodile that you did that 3D thing?
Nile crocodile.
Okay, yeah. I loved that. For some reason, that just really stuck out to me.
Thank you.
So really, really awesome, amazing work. And I know you had a lot of female models on there as well. Mm-hmm. And then since we cover a lot of stuff from the female perspective, mm-hmm. and we're actually going to have an interview coming up soon with, I don't know if you know Munster Midian from...
Oh, it sounds familiar.
Munster Effects, and she does, her name is Midian Crosby.
Okay.
And she does a lot of special effects. She's worked on, The Walking Dead and stuff like that. And she's
awesome.
Out of Atlanta.
Okay.
And I actually went to high school with her, but I was talking to her a lot about working as a female in the industry. Mm-hmm. And so are there a lot of women that you've worked with or that you've, that are also concept artists, or how does that work with...
Yeah. So you're kind of asking about demographics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or if you've ever had experience working with, or do you find there are a lot of women in that industry?
It's kind of an open topic.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I'll give you my thoughts on it. So yeah, it's interesting. So entertainment obviously is a very 50-50 demographic. Mm-hmm. There's entertainment that everyone's going to engage in, whereas there's plenty of different industries that just pique different interests, right?
Yeah.
But I'm fortunate enough that I'm in an industry that piques everyone. So it's very multicultural. The ages range, mm-hmm. All the way from young people like me, all the way to, the classics. And of course, men and women as well.
Yeah.
But what is very interesting that I've found is what interests people and kind of what guides them to go places. So when I'm on an American Horror Story, mm-hmm. and I'm working with the Costume Designers Guild, it's 80, 90, maybe even more, 100% women.
Yeah.
And that's a very interesting perspective, which you know, right? And just, it's interesting just how, they're going to be thinking about things. Mm-hmm. And I'd be curious, your perspective, I'm not totally certain that's them being female, it might have to do with what the medium is, mm-hmm. what the what that project currently is, but I'm sure there is something to how a man or a woman would approach a design project, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then kind of on the other side of things, let's just say if I'm on a video game,
yeah,
that's the polar opposite. Now that becomes 95% men.
Mm-hmm.
And that also, as you can imagine, has a very distinct, unique way of looking at things, solving problems. So I'm fortunate to kind of be in both. There's a ton of spectrum in between. It's not, mm-hmm. Polar opposite. Most of the studios I'm at, I would say, I'm in, some technical work as well. So the more kind of, computer nerdy mm-hmm. stuff it gets, the more I think it kind of gets a bit male dominated. But I'm very fortunate. I've been able to work with, everyone. I don't know. What do you think? Does that kind of answer the question?
No, it really does. Because I know we were talking about that a little bit beforehand. So I just wanted to pick up on that a little bit and since we are a podcast that covers that as well, just seeing if you had seen people in your industry or women, or if it had been changing or picking up at all, or anything that you had kind of observed in that area.
I could talk about that change too. That's an interesting question.
Okay.
So, so this is very interesting. I think, probably for good reason, most artists have kind of a trajectory where, you kind of go through, a time with your parents where mm-hmm. they're kind of do you really want to do this? Maybe you want to think about, making money and having a solid career, that kind of thing. So I think that affects everyone. But I think that there is a difference between a young man and a young woman going through that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think planning out the life trajectory for each of the genders has to be different. We live different lives, right? And so part of me and some of the friends I have, some of the female friends I've had, have kind of described it we have those natural artistic pressures,
mm-hmm.
but then we also have pressures that a woman would have, right? To have kids and a family and stuff like that. And I mean, I have those pressures too, but I get the impression it's very different, right?
Yeah, very, very, very
yeah.
different. Mm-hmm.
And so I think what's happening is that because the industry is obviously more inclusive and mm-hmm. it's growing and more people are able to participate, and it's obviously much bigger, right? So there's mm-hmm. more opportunity. I have heard a lot of female friends say that they are, I guess you'd say, like, you know, able to kind of overcome those pressures mm-hmm. and are now realizing, oh, I can actually do both. You can make a living. You know, you can actually, you know, have this as a career and afford yourself the time, the lifestyle to also have the family and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I've only been in the industry a decade, but I have seen a lot of young women that I've hired or that have hired me who have really kind of able to, you know, had it all mm-hmm. or have it all. So I don't know. I kind of see a really positive trajectory for all the artists, but, you know, specifically to the topic. Yeah, young women being able to pursue what they want. And have that upward mobility trajectory, because at the end of the day, it's art. Art is very meritocratic. So if you're good, you're going to go get hired. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even just here at the convention, there's got to be close to a 50-50 split, men and women artists.
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorite artists, who I actually just met the other day here, her name is Cache, mm-hmm. And she is an absolutely brilliant inking pencil artist. Hopefully I'm doing her title justice. but yeah, it's I bring her up because it's really nice to see you know, people being able to say, I can actually do all of this. This is actually a legitimate trajectory, mm-hmm. and the future's looking bright as more and more people realize that and can participate and contribute.
Yeah. No, awesome. That's wonderful to hear.
Yeah.
And you find that, you know, I've brought it up a couple times this weekend that, you know, also in the horror community, it can be hard sometimes to be a fan of horror as a woman, because other fans, not necessarily creators, but uh-huh. other fans can be a little bit like, no, this is a male thing and women don't like this. That still happens occasionally to women.
Yeah, I'd like to hear more
women.
About that.
Well, it's like, for instance, I was at the Atlanta Women in Horror Film Festival in Atlanta mm-hmm. a couple years ago, and it was there wasn't as much turnout, especially by men. There were tons of women there to watch this, but not many men, because talking to a couple people, they were like, well, men just think this isn't going to be scary. There's not going to be any terrifying stuff because women are creating this stuff. And I'm like, we saw some very terrifying things.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, is that true? Does that have any truth to it?
No, that's not true.
It's just an assumption.
It's just an assumption. So I like the fact that, like with you and with every horror creator that I have talked to that's male, I've never found that where it's like they're not including women or they don't want to hear from women. I think it's more something with the fans, because you can kind of run into that where it's like, okay, why are you here?
That's interesting.
Yeah, which is just and it's something that, you know, happens a lot in like science fiction. And when we covered Star Trek on my show, I was told for a long time beforehand, don't do that on your show as a woman. You are going to get attacked online. You're going to get. So
really?
So I held off on doing it for
a
while.
It has to do with like. You being a woman having commentary on that mm-hmm. specific
yeah and having
IP.
Other women on there that are talking about that yeah
that's so interesting you yeah. get backlash
yeah but from men yeah who think they you know they want to say well you're not really a fan of this
that's so interesting
yeah.
and pardon
yeah,
my ignorance
totally
but
no,
so they're saying because you're women it's mm-hmm. not like other reasons
yeah and
like,
they don't exactly come out and say that it's more like the
kinda,
way you're being attacked or the way you're being quizzed or the way you're being questioned on things you know happens with, we talked about female gaming not too long ago, what happens in that world, mm-hmm. and, you know, where it is that thing of like, okay, well, shouldn't you just be, you know, like baking cookies, or shouldn't you just be watching rom-coms, and...
What the fuck, someone said that to you, baking
it's
cookies?
It's like along those lines, not to me, no, but I've heard
I
that before,
you,
yeah, but it's along those kind of lines. So it's nice that the creators, that I haven't seen that from the creators. I'm not saying that doesn't exist, because of course it probably exists.
For sure.
But it's just nice thing. So I just throwing that out there as a thank you for at least for listening and for talking about that. And
oh yeah,
100%.
I mean, you tell me if this is controversial at all, but oh, I'm like, if you're good at what you do, and mm-hmm. you're passionate, you like mm-hmm. it, you should be there. And my, you know, I'm only 10 years in, but in my experience, that is completely rung true.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. So I'm curious, what's your favorite character you've ever designed?
Oh shit! Of my own, I can't like
yes,
say other artists
of your own, and then you can say other artists,
okay.
Or if you want to give it a second for yours, you can say other artists.
Yeah,
and
damn,
that
I don't
one.
Know. It's tough because whenever I'm designing, I'm like, you know, I put in all this effort, and then I'm like, ah, but I could have done it better. You know.
Well, of course, we're always our own worst critic.
I know, like a
yeah.
true artist.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you like what I've had like the most like fun designing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's obviously like character, but when I'm able to do like character plus costume and I read a script and I'm like working with all the departments, like that's the best, you know, it's a big collaborative effort. I'll bring up American Horror Story again. So the costume designer that I work very closely with, her name is Lou Eric, and she is a multiple Emmy Award winner. She's absolutely incredible. And she's like, man, when she's designing, it's like, it's almost like watching like a boxing match. She's so like cutthroat. Get in there and figure out the design. So yeah, like the plague doctor that I did, that was completely, you know, me and Lou, you know, figuring all that out. We're the first people to ever do a, you know, a see-through plague doctor mask. So yeah, it's cool. So yeah, things like that. So with that plague doctor, it's like I'm doing the costuming. Mm-hmm. We're considering makeup with AFX. You know, we knew that it was going to be going on Kathy Bates and the other actors, so unfortunately I didn't get to meet her, but...
Oh, that's too bad.
I know, that would have been incredible. But yeah, so it's all those things kind of combining, so when I have the rare opportunity that I can kind of be the concept artist in the center of all that, I mean, that's, you know, that's a dream.
Yeah, awesome. And so from other creators, so who are like your idols?
Yeah, 100%. So you know what? I actually have two characters that stand out to me, but for very different reasons. Mm-hmm. So the first one's more of just a childhood. I thought it was like the coolest aesthetic. Is Pinhead from Hellraiser.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously. It's iconic. Mm-hmm. The other one, I think, for a little bit deeper reasons, I really like the character Ellen Ripley. From the original, you know, the Alien series. My dad showed me that when I was, like, very little, and it changed everything. And so I just think that what Sigourney Weaver has done with that character is just, I mean, it's one of the most brilliant portrayals, brilliantly written characters that has stood the test of time for good reason.
Yeah, definitely.
And I hope to make a character that powerful one day. Just once, and then I'll be...
Yeah.
That'll be my career.
I was going to ask you what your dream, and you just kind of answered
it
there.
Yeah,
yes, 100%. Yes, yes. Which makes sense, because then you'll have a legacy character that...
Yeah,
live
I
want to
touch
and
people,
on.
Man. Yeah,
yeah.
It's very cool to, you know, see everyone here coming together, everyone enjoying, you know, all my IPs together. So
it'd
be incredible if I could just have a part in that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you'll do that someday. Seriously.
Thank you. Your
work is really, really, really good, so you should be really proud of yourself.
Thank you. I'm trying every day.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be hard, but yeah. So I know you talked a little bit about your upcoming projects, but is there any other project you want to just give a shout out to, or something that's coming, or maybe even something that's under the radar or anything like that?
Yeah, 100%. I have two really interesting projects. They're not exactly like film or horror related though. Is that okay?
Oh yeah, no.
Okay.
We cover everything, so it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, film and television is my bread and butter, but it is very much like a, you know, a gig economy. So it's not like... Yeah. I mean, in some cases, right? But it's not like you get hired and you're there full-time, so it's projects come to you. So, I mean, I have, you know, some current kind of films or television shows I'm in talks with, you know, could happen. Unfortunately, I can't say too much more. So that's the film angle. But I do have a really interesting project. I'm working with a team in London. Their company is called Ouroboros. I'm doing some art directing for them. And... You know, this is actually good for the podcast. I didn't even think about this. So they're actually a duo of young women working in the tech and digital fashion space. Their names are Paula Cello and, I forget our developer's name. We just started. Alyssa Albakova. And they're brilliant. So they come out into this digital fashion space, which is very new, right? The NFT craze just started. Everyone's figuring out, like, what do you even do with digital fashion? And they figured out what to do with it. So they came out with their first collection. They have this, you know, six digital pieces, and it does extremely well. They get partnerships with Snapchat and, you know, all these fashion companies. Things are going. And so they contacted me, and they were like, would you like to design an avatar to wear some of our outfits? Because they saw some, you know, creatures in the portfolio. And I was like, absolutely, I love fashion, you know, you can probably tell from the portfolio. And it's a completely new space. And these are two, I think they're a little younger than me even. So, and they're two like super ambitious, you know, interested in the space. So I couldn't say no. So I'm currently art directing their second line. We're gonna have 14 completely digital pieces with 7 completely unique avatars. It's gonna be absolutely unlike anything you've ever seen in fashion on the runway. It will be completely digital. You can tell I'm very excited for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, future's looking bright.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to that and all your other projects and everything. And sometime I would love to sit down and talk to you longer about stuff. So thank you.
Are we calling it already? You don't have like a super controversial question to hit me with?
I'm like, what's super cut? I know. I'm like, I have to because I want to give her a chance to come in here and ask you questions.
Yeah,
I'll think of some really super controversial questions.
I'm going to come on for season two.
Yes. Thank you again to Brink Stevens and Xander Smith for sitting down and taking the time to talk to me. I really enjoyed both those conversations, and yeah, I enjoyed all my conversations. I just want to give another shout out to Brian, to Lorraine, to Jimmy, to Brink, and to Xander. Just it was so much fun getting to hear from such creative and wonderful and amazing human beings. And I just feel so blessed that I was able to do that. So thank you. And then I want to give a big shout out to Colorado Festival of Horror for their inaugural event, which I think went off really well. And I just loved it. I had so much fun. I can't wait for next year. So, and a big special shout out to Brett, who helped organize the whole event, and to Smurf, who was helping run the media room, who made me and my team feel so welcome to the event, and just great guy, great people. So hats off to both of you, really. Thank you again. And I can't wait for next year's event. Okay, well, remember, you can follow me on Twitter at eAprilBeauty. The E and the A and the B are capitalized. Be sure to like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/itsafandomthingpod. On Twitter at fandomthingpod, no it's in that one. On Instagram at itsafandomthingpod. If you have any feedback, show notes, if you would like to be a potential interview guest on the show, feel free to reach out to us at itsafandomthingpod@gmail.com. And tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, since this episode's dropping on Friday, join us for night 3 of our horror trivia event, Werewolves. And like I said on our last episode, I'm not going all out on my costume on this one. I'm like, I've got to give myself a little bit of a break. I've got to do 10 costumes. And of course, signups have closed, but these events are so much fun. And you can find like links to the actual events on our Facebook page. And Instagram as well. We've posted like the links to like the cocktails, the themed cocktails and mocktails for each event. And so you'll see that on our Instagram page. And I'll also share the link. It should be in our link tree as well. And Chrissy, one of the contestants, came up with these, and it's just incredible that she did that. So it's just amazing. So tune in on our YouTube channel or on our Facebook page for our night 3 tomorrow at 6 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. And next week, we are continuing our horror celebration with a look at Stephen King. So that'll be just me and Paula just discussing Stephen King, his books, probably film adaptations as well. So that'll be an interesting conversation. And then next Friday, I'm very excited because we are recording an episode this weekend with two guys that I just adore to pieces, Roman and Tyler, who were on, of course, earlier this year for a great interview. Please go listen to it, and then please go watch their amazing documentary that they directed, Scream Queen, My Nightmare on Elm Street. And we are going to be talking about queer horror. So I'm so excited to sit down with them again and to talk about this subject. So it should be a lot of fun. I'm just blessed. So until next time, remember, it's a fandom thing. Black Lives Matter, and stop Asian hate.